The Lifeboat Hour with Michael Rupert, Sundays at 9 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Nightclub at the end of the world in a very soggy Culver City having another night of torrential rain. I'm Michael C. Rupert, and this is the Lifeboat Hour. I really missed you guys. I got to say that. And apologies to everyone. We were dark last week. That couldn't be helped. They had this thing called a blizzard in New York City, and the staff at Progressive Radio Network couldn't even get into the studio. So we had to go dark last week, and we had a great guest then, and he's been gracious enough to come back with us this week, Tom Brown Jr. We'll get to him in a couple of minutes. And I just got a message to all the street sweepers in New York City who slowed down and caused all these troubles because they don't like their benefits being cut and their wages being cut. Get over it. There's no going back to the way it was. It's not going to happen. I'm not defending Bloomberg or corrupt politicians or anything else, but guys, you're just mistaken if you think there's a pot of honey that somebody's holding on to somewhere. It ain't going to get nothing but worse from here. If you want to call in tonight and ask Tom Brown or me a question, you can call 1-888-874-4888, or you can email me directly at lifeboathour@collapsenet.com. That'll come up right on my screen. We've already got like five or six questions that have come in for Tom Brown, so I'm going to move quickly here. We want to get right to this great guest. On top of everything else the Brits are going through, the possibility of a true pandemic, you know, the kind we've worried about for years, is really increasing. Swine flu is breaking out all over the country in what is now certified as the coldest winter in something like 150 years. I mean, it's blazingly cold, and people don't have money to pay for fuel, which is for heating oil. And they're not having a good time over there. A story we posted yesterday on the World News Desk at CollapseNet showed that the average Briton is spending, are you ready for this, $360 a month for heat. I don't know about you, but that would be an enormous amount of money for me. And that's just something that everybody has to carry. And they've just had a fuel price increase of 70-some cents a liter. Huh. Flu in Britain. Here's from today's Independent. Fears of flu epidemic rise as schools start new term. With infection rates soaring, Labour says the government has seriously misjudged the crisis. No kidding. Related intensive care admissions soared from 460 to 738 between Christmas, and that means the rate of infection there is increasing and schools about to start. So anyway, Britain is now jumping wholeheartedly into shale gas. I'll just read the book, see the movie. Jenna Orkin wrote, it's like guzzling salt water to quench one's thirst. The solution provides relief in the short term, death in the long. How true. How true. Jenna Orkin is one of the people who makes our World News Desk work every day, and she's been around for a long time, and we all say hi to her and Happy New Year. Inflation's now starting to ravage countries all over the world, largely thanks to QE2. Vietnam has been especially hard hit. China has suddenly raised interest rates a second time, and that's going to have a serious impact on world markets like tomorrow. This is happening about peak oil. Now, peak oil is making itself known in spades around the world. Is someone expecting a shooting war over New Year's? That was the title of a story that came up on a market ticker service. And I'm looking at a chart here from December 31st. And what it shows is a vertical spike. I mean, like a rocket took off right toward the end of the trading day with a lot of volume behind it. And that's a serious market move. So we could see a lot of volatility tomorrow in oil tomorrow morning. Major fuel protests are looming in Britain. They just had a 76 pence per liter new tax take effect. And there's a value-added tax that starts on Tuesday. Whoopee. Recently, Iran ended fuel subsidies to encourage growth, but that's in a near totalitarian state. Bolivia, on the other hand, had to back down after major riots erupted when President Evo Morales eliminated fuel subsidies there this week. The riots threatened to topple his government, and he backed down. I'm not so sure that's a good thing. It's only going to hurt worse when it happens. But from yesterday's Wall Street Journal, Pakistan rises gasoline and diesel prices, citing subsidy burden. Pakistan's, I have no idea what that's going to do. That's just going to be messy. And we caught this off a South Korean website, Dong Ilbo. On New Year's Eve, South Korea energy attention warning issued amid rising oil prices. Oil is now firmly got a bottom of around 90, and it looks like it's going to be at 100 soon. And everybody's pretty clear. I mean, it's a pretty universal opinion now that we're looking at maybe 150 oil this year. We look to break through the peak of just before 2008, summer of 2008 at 147. So here it is. Remember what I said in the movie. I said it very clearly. I said the end of, or the cliff event or the death knell for human industrial civilization would come when there was another oil spike and nobody could afford to buy that oil. Well, here we are. All of a sudden, a rice farmer who also makes a wonderful addition to our world news desk offered, all of a sudden, governments which have been subsidizing fuel and food costs for years are finding that it's unsustainable at current oil prices. It's the way money works. $4 gas is on the airwaves all over the place now and in the press, and we may see $5 gas in 11, and that will certainly be the death knell for this economy. Anyway, so we have that. We have Europe is continuing a meltdown at a record pace. The contagion is spreading throughout, and there still is no real solution. I'm not even sure China can bail them out, as I was talking about with Gary Null. Congress comes in very shortly. A Republican House with Republicans chairing the committee. The debt ceiling is looming. We might break it again. And if a spending resolution raising the debt ceiling isn't passed, it would be catastrophic for bonds, for everything else. It would shut down the government. The Republicans are going to hold that hostage. And what they're going to do is they're going to demand budget cuts like you cannot possibly imagine. And now we also have a measure moving that'll move through the Republican House, allowing states to go bankrupt. And we're going to see bankruptcies of, in 2011, New York, New Jersey, California, Illinois, Michigan, and God knows who else, as well as major cities. The unions will be broken. The pension funds will be stolen. And that's coming so fast, we can't possibly imagine that either. And in the midst of all this, we have China, which is also having a major meltdown. So there you go. And I'm not the only one thinking this way. A couple of weeks ago, we had a great guest, Nicole Foss from The Automatic Earth, writes as Stonelay. And she was extremely enlightening, and she expressed her own sense of urgency about coming events, sharing remarkably on the same page. And next week, our guest will be Chris Martinson from ChrisMartinson.com, who is highly respected, also who is also conveying a strong sense of urgency. And I'm telling you, I'm hearing it from Robert Prechter. I'm hearing it from Peter Schiff. I'm hearing it everywhere. And all of us are on the same page. Something big is really here. It's right now, and it's not going away. So one last story I wanted to get to here before we get to Tom, and it's kind of a decent segue. Business Insider: there's a huge crime spike in Newark, New Jersey, after police department cut. This is from Business Insider on December 24th. It's happening all over the country, and in case you haven't noticed, multiple homicides of police officers are occurring all over the country as well. And being a former cop, that really hits home. These times are getting very dangerous, and there's a lot of things that we need to talk about. Let me tell you quickly about Collapse. Oh, I got some amazing news. This is really good news. You know how we've been pushing for the challenge grant for Transition US to make $100,000 by December 31st. We've been doing it on the show. We've been doing it on CollapseNet, and we've had a number of shows on the subject. And at any rate, what happened was on December 24th, someone went to the Transition US website and saw that they were, I think it's $6,812 short of the $100,000. And the challenge grant, meaning that if they raised the money, that it would be matched by another $100,000. And someone made a donation of $6,812 in my honor. And I'm assuming that's one of you out there listening tonight, but I want everybody to know that Transition US did it, man. They raised $100,000. That means they're going to have $200,000, and it couldn't have come at a better time. And if you're out there listening, and to all of you from Lifeboat Hour who helped make that happen, I want to say thank you. So now I'm going to go back to CollapseNet real quick before we get to Tom. The important work that we do at CollapseNet, that's CollapseNet.com, which is my website, is to make sense of all of what's going on everywhere for you by looking at all the crises of our time. Economic collapse, sustainability, peak oil, geopolitical and military events, resource depletion, environmental collapse, and, you know, what's obviously the end of the world as we know it. We deal with it, we research it, we analyze it, we illuminate it, and we hook people up in some really cool ways to help them and you. Perhaps most importantly, we clearly see and acknowledge what's happening in the world around us, and we help you to see it so you can prepare for it. People are being eaten alive right now, and so we have things like a free lighthouse directory of information, which now has more than 850 really uniquely useful goods and services. Managed by a wonderful woman volunteer, Fred. Yes, I love her to pieces, Susie Gruber, who has like two master's degrees, and she's just amazing and totally dedicated and totally gets it. That's a free service that we have, and of course we have the World News Desk. But what's proving that, and that's what's proving to be the utmost of the utmost usefulness right now, the World News Desk for our. At CollapseNet, the testimonials from our members, who are often decision or policy makers, they prove over and over that CollapseNet World News Desk is the best single stop daily news and commentary location on the planet at any price. Thank you. And we're only about 27 cents a day. And here's a plus. If you are an active member of any of the 77 transition initiatives around the U.S., you're qualified for a 50% discount on our membership. Just go to your monthly newsletter and copy and paste the coupon code when you sign up. We have at CollapseNet awarded 20 barter memberships. For people who couldn't afford but really wanted to join, we now have 23 different active, very active member blogs from regions and on subject matter. And here's a great quote: "The only real security lies in relationships." And boy, is that the truth! That's the truth. And CollapseNet is all about relationships. And I think Tom Brown would probably say what he does is all about our relationships with the world we live in. Tom Brown. Okay. Tom Brown is like a legend. He's written, 2 million books. I think it's 17. And he has been a world-renowned survival instructor, wilderness teacher, tracker for many, many years now with an insanely loyal following. I was just up with him recently in Northern California, and I plan on going back up there to see him real soon because there's a great energy up there. Tom was a tech advisor on a movie called The Hunted with Tommy Lee Jones and Benicio del Toro, and you know, by their fruits ye shall know them. And if no offense, Tom, but you know what, you're a guy who has a lot of fruits out there, man. You have just left a track of a lot of achievement, and a lot of people swear by what you do. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you.
You've written, I'm going to list some of the books that you've written, Tom. The Tracker Story of Tom Brown, Jr., that was in 78. The Way of the Scout, A Native American Path to Finding Spiritual Meaning in a Physical World. I love that title. Tom Brown's Field Guide to Living with the Earth, Tom Brown's Field Guide to City and Suburban Survival. That's going to be important for what we talk about later in the show. Tom, what are you doing now? What's new?
Well, actually, I'm preparing to go back out to California. I've got another couple classes running there over the next couple of weeks, and then back here for 2 weeks, and then back out there for 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. Been going out there for about 15 years now. I realize that, for me to come out there, it's one plane flight. If students have to come all the way from California to me out here in New Jersey or wherever else we hold classes, it's a substantial, cost and plane flights and stuff. So I figured I'd bring it to them.
That's good. You are known for a lot of things, but with the quote unquote, and I use the term in a way that'll make us both laugh, legend of Tom Brown Jr. There is the story of grandfather. Can you tell us a little about him?
I'm sorry, you broke up there for a moment.
Tell us about
story of what?
Grandfather.
Oh, grandfather. My best friend, I met him when I was 7 years old, and then shortly, within a day, I met his grandfather, who was a full-blood Southern Lip and Apache. I was seven, and the man I called Grandfather Stalking Wolf, he was 83, and for nearly 11 years, just shy of 3 months of 11 years, I hung out every possible moment with him in the Pine Barrens that virtually was behind my house and where I grew up. And he taught me survival, tracking, awareness, philosophy, spirituality, that kind mm-hmm. of thing.
You're heavily influenced by Native spirituality, right?
Oh, absolutely. Actually, I don't want to call it Native spirituality, because he actually transcended the tools that brought him to the enlightenment that he had reached. Let's face it, we're born into this earth with nothing, and it's the earth that tends to teach us. I believe the earth, like grandfather believed, was the great spirit's greatest gift to us, and we're her caretakers, we're her children, and we learn everything from the earth.
Yes, we do. And, boy, you know, that message is being driven home throughout the sustainability movement or the lifeboat movement, whatever we choose to call it, which has to do with
absolutely.
This transition away from our dependence upon fossil fuels. I've got a ton of questions and four new emails just arrived. So I'm going to start by offering a question now. This is from Brad Laughlin. Greetings, Tom. Thank you for the inspiring teachings and books. And, boy, you have some loyal fans out there. In your book, The Quest, you write about some very detailed visions that both you and grandfather had about the collapse, which portray a very bleak future, a la The Road. If humanity doesn't shift its consciousness, boy, does that sound familiar, and behavior and come more into alignment with the spirit that moves in all things. All of the signs heralding in this future of doom have occurred except the final one, the night of the bleeding stars, or the red dawn, as the Hopi prophecy calls it. You wrote that after this final sign occurs, people should go into the wilderness to live, to make no permanent camps, and stay there for 10 winters, during which time society will destroy itself and a great die-off will happen. Science is kind of proving all of that correct, and that's, you know, this is all perfectly matching with stuff that I've written. Since the quest was written many years ago, it's a long question. Have you received any further information, here's the question, that would be helpful to share with us at this time? For example, does it still appear as though we are headed for the night of the bleeding stars, or has there been enough to shift to avoid a total calamity? Go ahead,
well,
Tom.
Basically, if you remember from the book, The Quest, it was grandfather's prophecies of the four signs that would herald the life on this planet as we know it to disappear. And, you know, the first prophecy sounded, you know, feasible to me. I was only a kid, 12 years old, when he had talked to me about this. And then he brought in the second prophecy where he said, and that will be marked by holes in the sky. And when I heard that, I thought to myself, I was scared, of course, but I thought to myself, who's going to see holes in the sky? And lo and behold, we found holes in the ozone layer. And that was a big wake-up call to me, because throughout all four of grandfather's prophecies, is that vector called disease. And we are seeing emerging pathogens coming from all over the place. The swine flu, the avian flu, AIDS, Ebola. We're getting into simple diseases that could have been cured by penicillin, like staph infection, is now resistant to penicillin. And what grandfather said is when the skies turn red, and you'll find that in a lot of different prophecies, that we are, as children of the earth, have got to run to the wild places. And ironically, I asked my brother, who's he got his PhD in diseases, microbiology, biochemistry. He said, it's because of disease, Tom. You don't sick in the woods. You don't get sick when you're away from the masses of people. And along with, Michael, what you say about the economic collapse and the fuel and everything else, there is that vector of disease that I am scared to death of. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've just been laid up for 8 weeks now with a bout of pneumonia, I guess from, as my wife calls it, working too hard, but... My God, the rate that this stuff is coming out mm-hmm. is alarming, very alarming.
Yeah, and, one of the first things that you said when I called you on the phone, I think it was about 3 weeks ago, the first time we spoke on the phone, and you said we have so little time, and I heard the conviction in your voice, and of course I'm feeling exactly the same thing, and so apparently are a great many other very sane, credible people. There is an extreme sense of urgency now. Of course, everybody probably asks you like they ask me, is how long do we have? Well, what do you say to that question?
How long do we have? You know, grandfather be the one to tell you there is no future. There is just possible and probable futures. The decisions we make now, individually and collectively, determines what probable future is going to happen. Mm-hmm. And the way I see it, you know, is that maybe grandfather predicted that I would be his age when I met him, which would mean that would be 2032, and 2032. When the skies appear red. I'll be 82, 83 years old then. I got to live long enough to say, see, I told you so. But I believe that it's a probable future, but what we do now determines whether that future is going to come sooner or later, and unfortunately, right. I think it's coming sooner.
And that's why this shift in consciousness is so important. This is the evolution that the human species must make. It is not an evolution of a limb or a finger or a digit. It is an evolution in our state of mind. Tom, you know I'm in a band, right, called New White Trash?
Right.
Okay. Well, we always play a song on the show, and we have a song that I think is real appropriate tonight, especially when we get to the second part of the show when we talk about your urban escape course with Jorge Bana. But we have a song called We Can't Escape From, which is the first song I co-wrote from the band, and I added the Native American lament with the vocals, but I helped to write the song. The incredible female vocals on this record are performed by Kristen Vigard. She's just amazing. This is called We Can't Escape From. I hope. Okay. Where'd the board operator go? Jason, are you there? All right. Well, we're just going to continue then. Oh, we got it. Wrong song.
Baby, I'm on my way.
Where you gonna escape from?
escape from. That's from the New White Trash. You can find us at www.newwhitetrash.com. Our album, CD, Double Wide. It's a double CD, 37 original songs. You can find there. Download it. You can get one sent to you. You're actually buying it. And guess what? We're going to get a review soon. We'll keep you posted here. That's pretty good. We've got a couple of minutes now before we go to the break at the bottom of the hour. And I just want to give everybody a heads up. I've got like six unanswered questions already there, and I have six more emails that are all questions for Tom Brown Jr. We're going to try to get to those as quickly as possible. When we come back after the station break at the bottom of the hour, we're going to be joined by one of Tom's instructors who was a former student, a great guy, Jorge Bana from Argentina, who has survived some really, really dire urban situations, and he's now running a course for Tom called the Urban Escape Course, and we're going to talk about that. And then I'm going to try to get as many of these questions in as soon as we come back from the station break. If you would like to ask Tom a question, the number is 1-888-874-4888, or you can email me direct at lifeboathour@collapsenet.com. This is Mike Rupert. We'll be back. This is the bottom of the hour, and then we're going to rock the rest of the show.
You are listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Stephen Lindman hosts the Progressive Radio News Hour, Saturdays and Sundays, as well as currently on Thursdays, as an antidote to government and corporate propaganda on the most cutting-edge world and national topics. Distinguished guests are regularly featured to provide commentary and analysis impossible to the dominant media, offering biased, irresponsible misinformation and what Project Censored calls junk food news. The Progressive Radio News Hour airs Thursdays from 11 to 11:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, as well as Saturdays and Sundays at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Progressive Radio Network. Make it a regular habit and stay informed.
Hello. Check out my show, The Animal Magnet Pet Radio, live every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern on Progressive Radio Network. Or catch it anytime you like by scrolling through the archives. You'll hear me, Deborah Wolf, best-selling author and award-winning radio host, chatting with the best pet experts and animal A-listers in the world about controversial topics like breed bans, the indoor versus outdoor cat debate, and whatever else is hot in the news and on their minds that matters to animals and the people who love them. Plus, we tell pet jokes, we'll give you trivia and smart, quirky facts, recipes, and take-home tricks and tests, homework your pets will love. Email your pet problems to me and we'll solve them on air. So listen to The Animal Magnet on Progressive Radio Network and get your animal fix.
Hi, Progressives. This is Betsy Rosenberg on the Green Front. I hope you've been enjoying the news I'm bringing you hot off the press, so to speak, like behind-the-scenes stories and insider scoop from Al Gore's recent climate conference. I know the Greenistas and love introducing the most informative and inspiring experts on the Green Front every week. So join me as we learn more about our environment and what we can do to turn it around.
The Green Front with Betsy Rosenberg, every Wednesday at 2 on the Progressive Radio Network.
You are listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
It's got everything you need. Your oven's warm and there's something to eat. It's got everything in your way. It's cold outside, but it's just warm and sweet here. It's got everything you need. When life gets heavy, I'm the one you need here.
Baby, I'm on my way. Welcome back to the Lifeboat Hour with our guest Tom Brown Jr. We're going to bring on Jorge Bana here in just a few seconds. We got so many questions piling up. I'm going to do the best I can, everybody, to get to them. Tom, let's take one more question before I bring on Jorge. This is a question from Sherman Lee, who is a CollapseNet member. He says, he asks, if one were to live in an area where firearms were prohibited for hunting and self-defense, which of the following would you recommend? One, a bow, two, a compound bow, or three, a crossbow? Which of the three mentioned above would work for someone who is small in stature and with not a whole lot of upper body strength? Thank you, respectfully, Sherman Lee.
Well, tell you the truth, with firearms, once you make a shot, everything knows where you are. I'm primitive all the way, and I say a self-bow. The reason I say not a compound is because over the years they're going to break down, and if you know what hits the fan, you're not going to find parts for it. I suggest strongly you learn how to make your own bow and arrowheads. And actually, a 28-pound pole bow can kill a deer very easily, providing your stalking and tracking skills are also good. Check how many hunters fill their tags during the year. You'd be surprised. It's only like 2% of them.
That went fast. Let's do one more before we get to Jorge, so I can make some of these fans of yours happy and make sure they get their questions on. This is another CollapseNet member and a Keeper member. How much dirt time should one spend a week to become proficient in basic survival skills, and how does one make this time in today's plugged-in society? Do you think there will be enough wilderness to go around for all the people that plan on heading that way when the SHTF, you know what that means. How quickly do you
see basic
services deteriorate?
We use it often. Yeah, there's no possible way that everybody's going to run to wilderness. People aren't going to make it. It's that simple. And remember, when I say disease, I'm not just talking about human disease. I'm talking about diseases to our crops, our livestock. Look at how many chickens have to be put to death every year. Not everybody's going to make it. Let's get serious. Mm-hmm. You've got to be damn good in survival. And like I always say, you know, people who think they got it, like Donald Trump can't buy a glass of water in the desert. Sometime go out into the woods with just your clothes on and say, could I survive here for 6 months with nothing? When you get to that level, then you stand a damn good chance. But without it, I don't hold out much hope for you.
Spoken by a man whose classes are always full. I mean, how many classes do you run a year, Tom?
We run what we call two on, two off. We run back-to-back classes. We'll finish one class 1 week, start another week, and then take 2 weeks off, give me time to write, lecture, and stuff like that.
And how do people find your website?
Pardon?
How do people find your website?
It's easy. TrackerSchool.com.
Cool.
TrackerSchool.com. It's very simple. And I encourage my instructors, many of them have been with me for decades. Jorge, for instance, has been around for a long time. I encourage them to run their own classes because there's only one of me.
Speak of the devil, Jorge Bana, who is on the line now, was with the Argentinian Federal Police and he worked through the meltdown of the democratic government after the 1976 coup by a military junta following the death of Perón, Juan Perón. 1976 was an especially fateful year for me, too. There was also a guerrilla uprising in Argentina. There were death squads and general lawlessness. And Jorge left after the war with Britain in 82-83 and moved to L.A. He took his first class with Tom in 1995 and was a student until, I think, about 03 when he became an instructor for Tom. Jorge and I have met. He's a great guy. And let me just say briefly that Argentina has been through some of the most amazing stuff that we can imagine. Los desaparecidos, the disappeareds, is a legendary term from the crackdown over civil unrest. They had a banking crisis where the banks all shut down and the ATMs shut off, and Argentina has been through it, so he brings a lot of experience. Welcome, Jorge.
Welcome. Thank you very much. Good evening. Happy New Year to everyone.
Thank you. Now, you've been teaching for Tom for how long?
Since 2004.
Okay. Now, there's a new course that's an urban escape course. Can you tell us a little about that?
Yeah, that's something that most of the stuff that I do is related to cooking, primitive cooking and all that stuff, but wanted to get away from that and design this course with Tom's, and he gave me the green light to go ahead with it. was a great opportunity to use a lot of the stuff that I learned down there in Argentina when we have the civil unrest, and it lasted for a long time. I learned a lot of the techniques trying to survive daily. And I saw the opportunity, and I said, when we spoke with Tom, and what do you think about this? And doing the escaping the city toward the wilderness and the transition and what we will take to do that.
What kind of challenges do people face?
It's immense. The first class that I run, as an example, I base it out of the city of Los Angeles, for example. It's surrounded by desert and ocean and hundreds of thousands of gang members and not many ways in and out of the city. So I base the class into a scenario like that. How do you leave Los Angeles? What will it take? All the stuff that you encounter along the way, and it's not going to be easy to pull out.
How long is the course? Is it days, weeks?
We did the pilot 4 days, but Tom wants to extend it now to a 6 day or 7 day class.
And Tom, you're involved in this too?
Yes.
Pardon?
Tom, you are involved in the escape
plan? I do what they call cameo appearances. the thing is I encourage Jorge to do this because if all the food and water shut down, how much in reserves does L.A. or New York have to feed millions of people? And are you going to stay there? No. You're going to get out of the city.
Yep.
Where are you going to go to? Well, that's what Jorge's course is all about. I just help them design it. And I kind of show up in the beginning, in the middle, and the end, and make sure everything's running right, and put in my 2 cents. But it's Jorge's baby, and he does a damn good job.
Okay, well, obviously there's a huge difference between an urban environment like Los Angeles, where I am, and I'm a former LAPD officer, and the woods and the wilderness where you can eat berries and all that. There's a different set of challenges. So what's primarily different about urban escape than from the wilderness? Hey, that's the name of a newsletter. Okay, what's unique about urban situations?
Well, you got people, you got diseases, and you don't have that in the bush. The deeper you go in the wilderness, the safer you become, providing you're a child of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to have to bow to Jorge because he has designed this class beautifully. Jorge, it's yours.
It's not easy. I'm in Los Angeles right now visiting for the holidays, and the city is gridlock on a daily basis. Imagine if we have a meltdown. Let's base it on, let's say, an earthquake. There's no food or water coming in and out, and the highways are closed, or there's gridlock everywhere. How do you get out?
Mm-hmm.
What is the best way, and what you will encounter, and what it will take, because it's going to be very, very difficult if you don't leave in time.
Okay, now, I would assume that one of the biggest challenges you're going to face in the city is a lot of people and the things that they may do. What kind of scenarios do you run the students through in terms of dealing with what, mobs, crime, what?
When I took my first class with Tom, was in the mid-90s, that was after the riots in Los Angeles, I understood immediately that I have a lot of knowledge of how to survive in the city. All these groups of people, mobs and riots, I know how to do that because that's what I did for a long time, but I didn't know anything how to get out of the city and survive.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be very difficult just to get out as soon as the police is overwhelmed, fire departments will be overwhelmed. It's going to be very, very difficult just to pull out. You're going to have to avoid a lot of the confrontations that are going to occur about food and water and any of your resources that other people want.
If I might interject, it's
sure.
All based on the Apache Scout. They had the ability to get in and out unobserved. In everything I've seen throughout the world. The Apache scouts, I think, were the finest guerrilla warfarists that ever existed. Mm-hmm. And what Jorge does is teach people to stalk, to track, to survive in a city, suburban environment.
Excellent.
While on the move, staying invisible, staying out of contact. In other words, if you are living in Montana, you got to know where the grizzly bears are before they know where you are. It's that simple.
That helps.
Just translate everything back to the city.
And how much does this course cost?
Well, the one that we run for 4 days was $550.
Right. Okay. And I just want to let all
listeners.
But you
feed them though. That's the bad thing.
Hey, I ate good when I came up to visit you guys, but you know, when I went up there 2 weeks ago to meet Tom and see his a couple days of his advanced school, he had, I don't know, 80 or 100 students there, and there were, you know, like women in their 60s, and what an amazing high-performance, really intelligent, aware, awake group of people, and boy, they come from just everywhere. And again,
well, like I tell people, at the end of a standard class, at the end of 1 week, you'll be able to survive any place with virtually nothing. You'll be able to track a mouse across a gravel driveway, and you'll be more aware than you've ever been in your life. And that's just class one of well over 100 classes that we offer.
That's great, man. Trackerschool.com is that. I've got some questions I'm going to roll to. It's from a regular listener, Austin Gill, who asked, Mike, what happened to Senate Bill S-510, the zombie bill? It was dead a couple of weeks ago over the holidays by the last-minute miracle that blew everybody away. It was resurrected, passed, and signed by the president, but here's the key part. The Tester Amendment, which exempts local food production, was intact when it was signed, when it was enacted into law. So we do have the protection for food that's consumed and traded 275 miles from where it's grown. That more than covers relocalization. I'm not saying it's a good bill, but that's the answer to that. Now let me see if we've gotten. Now there's more. Okay. 22 caliber rifles. Well, Tom's a knife guy, but the Ruger 10/22 is an excellent rifle for small game. We'll cross that one off the list right now. I'm going to go back to these questions just so I can make sure that your fans get everything in. I'm a CollapseNet member. I want to thank you all for what you were giving. Oh, no, we're not going to take that question. We're going back for that. Excuse me. Cold steel knives. Okay, Tom, this has got to be for you. It's not for me. CollapseNet member here with a question for your guest. What does he think of the Cold Steel brand of knives for survival, personal defense, camping, etc.? I think they're great knives with a wonderful edge, retention, and durability. Just wanted an opinion from a professional, and indeed Tom is. Tom, what do you think?
Well, now, I don't know, but you just broke up again. Can you just sum up that question?
The question was, what do you think about Cold Steel? It's a brand of knives, Cold Steel.
You know, any knife is a good knife, you know, providing it isn't a pop-out. Cold Steel is an excellent knife. Buck is a great knife, you know. Any knife manufacturers, for me, you know, knives are eventually going to wear out, and I go back to rocks. You know, it's the Stone Age all over again, you know, with me. But I'm a purist, you know. I believe when I train somebody, I'm sending them in there, imagine that they're naked. They have to do everything. They don't even have a knife. But Cold Steel's a good knife.
I've got some questions coming in more about the Urban Escape School, which is not surprising since most of us live in
the
city.
We figured that would happen, Jorge. Yeah. That's why you're on the show, dude.
Yeah, absolutely, man. You're on the spot now. What other kinds of scenarios do you run? You had mentioned to me like exposing people to gunfire and to mobs and things like that. Do you do that?
During the escape class, yes, we did. We did a lot of firearms training. A lot of the techniques that I learned that they're not teach anymore because everybody's doing different things. I teach what I learned back then and what it helped me to survive. And it's proven techniques. We did a lot of self-defense also, knife fighting. We did all kinds of techniques, escape and evasion. We did a lot of body language. We analyze, and we did a lot of body language, how to avoid a confrontation before it even begins. So we had, we you know, Steve Adams, a sergeant with the Long Beach Island Police Department. He helped me out. He was in the SWAT team, and he helped me out with the firearms, and it was fantastic class.
Just a couple of things, Michael. First of all, with the firearms, the Apache Scouts used to have a saying, learn the tools and the weapons of your enemy so you can use them against them, so they learn how things work. It's not like we have a live fire on each other, that kind of a thing. It's how to avoid that kind of thing. Also, there's a prerequisite for the escape class. You do need a standard class, which is our basic class for it, because you'd be totally lost when you hit the bush situation. You have to survive there.
Right, okay. Here's a question from, looks like there's a lot of overlap between people who've been to your school and people who are on CollapseNet, Tom. This is from Christopher Rowley. A few weeks ago, Mike discussed the spiritual dimension of societal collapse with a guest, Carolyn Baker. As a student who has taken Tracker School philosophy classes 1 through 4, I feel you can add tremendously to that discussion if you would describe in detail what your students learn and experience from the philosophy classes taught at the Tracker School. Go ahead.
Well, basically, Michael, as you heard me say, the Native Americans call it the spirit that moves through all things. The Taoists call it the life force. If you ever watched a flock of sandpipers up close, you could tell they're a group of individual birds. But when viewed from a long distance, all of those birds look like one single organism. In a flash, 1,000 bellies will turn to the sunlight, and the whole flock will change direction. Well, we're connected to that spirit that moves through all things. I teach students, for instance, in a philosophy class to go to a plant that they've never seen before in their life and know whether it's edible or medicinal, and if it's medicinal, what part of the body it would affect. We are bound by instinct like every other creature on Earth. We're not above the laws of creation. We just have to learn to re-tap into them. And the trouble is, it's been educated out of us. When I educate it back into us, that's one of the things we teach.
Yeah, I've had a, it's kind of a mantra that I've put out, is that what we're being asked to do in this evolution is not so much to learn, but it is to remember what it is that we knew instinctively and what our ancestors knew instinctively.
Exactly.
You know, I didn't see our ancestor, I can't see our ancestor Ugg running around, you know, 20,000 years ago asking, why am I having this wilderness experience? No, that was...
Exactly. You see, here's the sad thing about this, is that we are under the same laws as the rest of creation, as arrogant as we are as humans. Eventually, like when we're hit by a blizzard here, we're brought to our knees. But you see, the thing is, the Native Americans called it winter kill. When the population gets too big, unfortunately, there's the weak and the unskilled will die off. And that's the sad thing that we're going to be facing someday, and unfortunately, very soon.
Very soon, yeah. I mean, that's my line from the movie. If a bear attacks the camp, you don't have to be faster than the bear. You just got to be faster than the slowest camper.
Exactly.
And that's probably the idea in urban escape, because I've seen riots in this city, in Los Angeles, up close and personal. And, of course, I've seen a lot of other things, too. But this is stuff that people that you need to get prepared for, and I've never heard of any course that really offered this kind of exposure that could train people. When is the next escape urban escape course offered?
See, that's up to Jorge. I'm trying to get him off his butt.
Hey, man, Jorge, quit goofing off.
Now you're on the spot, Jorge.
We're thinking about April, but I was gonna see when I talk to Tom next couple of weeks if we like set up a time or not.
If you need some role players for that, Jorge, I'll be happy to come in and
street thug for you. You have to bring Rags with you.
I have to bring my dog. My dog Rags doesn't scare anybody. I took him up to this camp, and like everybody loved him and adopted him, and he came home 5 pounds heavier. this is really important stuff, because what's coming, as I've discussed on the World News Desk at CollapseNet regularly, is We're going to see major bankruptcies around the country. I opened with this story about major cutbacks in Newark, New Jersey, and now street crime is out of control there. And we just had a police officer murdered in Ohio yesterday. Two officers shot, one dead, deceased. And that's going on. And yes, the police are going to be absolutely overwhelmed.
And police are outgunned out there. It's sad. I know a lot of police officers are trained police officers, law enforcement, military, and we are outgunned.
Now, Tom, you have also been asked to teach for the U.S. military. Didn't you teach Dick Marcinko's SEAL Team 6?
Yeah, I taught some of his men from SEAL 6, basically tracking, counter-tracking, escape evasion, that kind of thing. Dick's probably the finest warrior out there as far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's I teach what I can, you know, comes and what wants to learn.
I have a third generation K-bar knife from SEAL 6, and then I've got one of your knives, Tom. It looks like I'm turning out to be a cutlery expert. but you know, that is something to be said, though, for the likes of our guest Tom Brown, that he has this kind of a track that he's left. We all leave a track of our deeds and what we leave behind. Now, what would be the normal progression for a student who would come in and take your basic course, which is, what, a week?
Well, the first week would be the standard course. You know, I require that of everybody. You
mm-hmm.
know, my definition of basics is a lot different than everybody else's
right.
is, but you'd never get an education like it in 10 weeks. You know, I put it into a week. And then they can go either into tracking, advanced survival, or the philosophical, once that first class is out of the road. But the first class deals with primitive survival, tracking, awareness, and the philosophy of living with the earth. It's all contained in that one class.
Okay, so you can choose like one of three paths, or you can cross back and forth. Jorge, you were a student for a long time. How many of Tom's courses have you taken?
About 11.
11. Now,
yes.
Okay, why?
That's unofficially.
that's when I was a student, I took my basic course on the standard class in 1995, and then I started following some of the philosophy classes, and then the advanced survival classes and advanced tracking, and then I went into the scout classes. So I went like 11 levels during those years.
Well, you know, I just have to say again, I went up there and spent 2 days with your class, and a day and a half, and I just met some amazing people, and even I learned a lot of things, and I saw what's eager for me is I've been a teacher, I've done a lot of lecturing, and what I enjoyed was that I saw people so hungry. And so gobbling up all the information that was being presented there. I saw this, Jorge, you were doing a camouflage course, which is great, which is essential
yeah.
for hunting, and it's probably essential to escape notice inside a city, too, that's gone crazy. And there are all different facets to that. But everybody was there like they were squeezing the last iota of knowledge out of every second. I love to see that. That's a great testimonial. My God, we're down to 1 minute left in the show. I don't believe this.
Well, I got to warn you something, Michael. We're coming down there to L.A. to pick you up to bring you back up to February standard class.
Okay.
I'm here, Michael. In
we
LA.
Had a good time when you visited.
Yeah, I know. Can I bring my dog?
Yes, absolutely. You know, dogs are always welcome. How's
good.
Dog doing?
Rags is happy as a clam. It's raining outside. He just had a big meal. He's laying on the floor with his feet up in the air. listen, guys, Tom Brown Jr., what a great pleasure and a great honor having you on my show. Jorge Bana, thank you so very much. You can find out all about these schools, and I'm sorry if we just had a lot to talk about tonight, but at trackerschool.com, the legendary Tom Brown, and those of you living in cities, well, what's coming down the pike you very much want to pay attention to, and if you can, get your hands on the Urban Escape course. that you can find out about on the site. Listen, it's time to go now, and I'm going to be back next week, and it's going to be a very busy news week. It's going to be a long, tough week with a lot of events happening, but CollapseNet is humming along. Thank you all for the support. Congratulations to Transition US on your challenge grant. Tom Brown and Jorge Bana, thank you so very much. This is Mike Rupert. This is the Lifeboat Hour, and boy, do I feel like this show is doing what it's supposed to. Thank you all for helping make this a success. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.